Welcome everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built. And we are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find more great coverage of the Big 12 over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends. Wherever you found it, you can boost us and give us all of your friends and put us in their podcast feeds. Just grab their phones, subscribe, and then give it back to them. That's how it works. And then we'll get downloads, and it'll be great. But thank you so much for listening. You can follow us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. I'd also like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They are a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best dress fans all year long, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all year long. They've only got a few of the Texas Women's Basketball Big 12 Championship shirts, celebrating one of the most successful Big 12 years for Texas, so grab that one while you still can, and you can use the code 101215 at checkout. That's TEN1215 to get 15% off any non-sale item. So check it out. Grab that Big 12 champion shirt for the ladies. Show off. And remember, the most successful year in the Big 12 as Texas was on the way out. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by the man himself, Westcott Eberts, back to help us get through this wild week of sports in Austin. Man, Westcott, how are you doing?
Dude, great, Gerald. I got to give a disclaimer to everybody. If I tend towards snark, it's when things aren't going well. Things are going very well for Texas sports, so I may not have very much snark for anybody this week.
I've been trying to double snark it in as much as I could, so I'll carry that burden.
You got to stay on brand.
I mean, it is who I am. I was on a Mississippi State podcast earlier, and they were not prepared for it. So it's fine. It'll be okay. So
they cope in a different way in Starkville.
It is cowbells, and I'm not sure what else. No, they were really great. They're really great. The SEC move is going to be weird. I'm going to make all new connections. Like, I'm like, who? I had my Big 12 people. Like, who do I talk to when I need to talk about whatever, right? It'll be fun. It'll be fun. So what we're here to talk about, we have a really successful couple of weeks on the 40 acres. So if you haven't been keeping up, 2 weeks ago, the men and women's track team claimed both the Big 12 championships. The men was a bit of an upset. The women was pretty expected, but number 13 and 14 on the year, they are currently heading to the national championship. They took off this afternoon, Monday, as of recording. This past weekend, rowing swept the Big 12 championship as well. Number 9 consecutive for them. And on the way out, not only did Texas set the record for Big 12 championships, I believe that they now have more than all the other schools so far combined, baseball notwithstanding. On top of that, number 3 men's tennis finished as the national runners-up in a close loss to TCU. Texas softball named the number 1 overall seed in the NCAA tournament, dominated their opening regional. First time they were the number 1 overall seed in school history. Dominant weekend from the pitching specifically. Mac Morgan, complete game shutout. Tegan Cavan, complete game shutout. So Lolly Gutierrez got touched up a little bit, but Texas's bats got them out of there early against Northwestern. So they've got A&M over the weekend. But we're here to talk about, it feels like if you've been with us since the beginning, you know, we launched this podcast in the middle of the Charlie Strong era, which was a bold choice. I'll say it now. It was a bold choice to do it. We survived Charlie Strong. We survived Tom Herman. And really almost this renaissance of Texas athletics in the last, I don't know, 3 to 5 years. And Westcott, you've been around, you know, obviously longer than 7 years, but you and I have kind of been around Texas athletics for quite a while. And so we've seen the ups, we've seen the downs. This, in my estimation, let me get your thoughts. It almost feels like an unprecedented level of success we're seeing in the last several years.
Yeah, no question about that. And I think, you know, your assessment there is considering across all of the 21 varsity sports that Texas has. Athletics director Chris Del Conte had a very publicly stated goal of winning, trying to win every Big 12 championship and all of those 21 varsity sports before they left the Big 12 for the SEC, which will officially happen on July 1st. 15 conference championships for Texas. Baseball still has a chance to win that. I think that's probably unlikely, but those 15 conference championships, most in history. And I think it not only speaks to the depth of athletic success that Texas has, and You know, one of the really fun things I think about just, you know, being around the coaches is how much they talk about the success of other programs. And I think that's not purely a manifestation of the sports information directors going around and saying, hey, you need to, you need to like talk about all this other success. It's because it's very much tied together, and all the athletes spend time together. The coaches spend time together. They talk about their successes and failures. And so just like, you know, the ability for somebody like Steve Sarkisian to sit down and talk to Eddie Reese, the men's and women's swimming and diving coach, one of the most legendary swimming coaches in the sport, who's retiring, and, you know, he'll be around, but they're hiring another very successful swimming coach. And so I guess, you know, to just kind of use a cliche, like iron sharpens iron. And that doesn't just happen, you know, in practice as Texas athletes go against each other. It also happens within the athletic department as the successes and the knowledge and acumen of these individual coaches sort of magnifies the success of these other coaches. And, you know, really just to put a fine point on it, you know, right now, I think, you know, Chris Del Conte deserves a lot of credit because he's made a lot of the hires that have really elevated these programs. Eldrick Floreal in track and field, Mike White in softball, Steve Sarkisian, of course, in football, you know, Vic Schaefer, you know, has done a great job with women's basketball. So, you know, the hires that Chris Del Conte has made, and not only that, but his ability to elevate the facilities across the entire campus, across sports, makes a huge difference. It helps those sports succeed. And, you know, I think Texas is really in a great spot right now, in large part because of the vision that Chris Del Conte has been able to execute in terms of facility improvements and the coaches that he's been able to hire.
So let's stay there for a second, Westcott. You mentioned DeLoss Dodds and kind of the, you know, you and I were on campus for the latter portions of the DeLoss Dodds era. We'll skip over Steve Patterson because that was, you know, a thing. But it's, you know, we weren't really talking about the vision of DeLoss Dodds for the athletic department. We weren't really talking. It was almost like he was this background figure. You knew he was there, but you didn't really see or feel his like influence or touch on the athletic department and programs as much as Chris Del Conte. Like, what do you think, I guess, how important do you think that level of intentionality? You know, Del Conte's been on Twitter interacting with fans, and famously he like caught a ride with somebody to a game. And, you know, he's there interacting with, you know, people that are asking even dumb questions online, or he's, you know, shifting things off to other members of the athletic department. Like, how vital do you think that has been to fan engagement? Because that was part of the thing that had been waning for a long time, was fan engagement. I think that feels like, in my mind, an intentional move on his part that's really, really paid dividends.
You know, I think to really talk about this, you know, we need to talk about the legacy of the DeLoss Dodds era, which I think in the big three sports, he hired Rick Barnes, Mack Brown, and Augie Garrido, that ushered in, you know, that golden era of Texas sports that, you know, resulted in national championships for football and baseball. You know, Rick Barnes, obviously, that Final Four run. You know, I think towards the end, I think there was a little bit of a lack of vision. But I think in some ways, like, even though, like, the quality of those hires kind of waned towards the end of his tenure and put, you know, Texas in a difficult position that, you know, resulted in the foibles of the Steve Patterson era. I mean, I think, you know, it's important to point out that one of the best things that DeLoss Dodds didn't do was creating a super league with the teams in the Pac-10, which, you know, I think we see now, like, the leadership of Larry Scott was very destructive to that league. Unbelievably destructive to that league. Now you've got teams on the West Coast that are in the Big Ten Conference that are allying with Rutgers. I mean, just like, so in that sense, we're in a very stupid era of college sports realignment before whatever comes next. And so I think one thing that Dodds did well was, for whatever reason, maybe it was a lack of ambition, maybe he knew something that was going on. I'm not sure if anybody's even, you know, necessarily asked him about, you know, that perspective recently, but he didn't make a decision that could have been very destructive. He stuck with the Big 12, some teams effective, and ultimately Texas ended up in the SEC. And to get towards, you know, what you were referencing, you know, I think Chris Del Conte deserves a lot of credit for his visions, especially on game day, completely restructuring and rebuilding, you know, the game day environment for Texas football games, leading the renovation of the south end zone. But more importantly than that, you know, creating Bevo Boulevard, Longhorn City Limits, you know, all of this, you know, as the campus constricted and the school lost all of, you know, these old traditional tailgating spaces, it was so imperative that the school gave people somewhere to hang out before games. And Del Conte did that. He had a very strong vision for that. His hires have been good. But I think there's also a level of alignment that goes up to the top of university leadership that was very different. You know, I really don't want to get into the politics of this, but
feel free to go as deep or shallow as you want.
Yeah, this is going to be a very shallow discussion of politics as it relates to the University of Texas. Rick Perry is no longer the governor of Texas, and installing people on the Board of Regents who do not have the best interest of the University of Texas system in mind. That's very clear. Greg Abbott does have a better alignment with the interests of the University of Texas system, and Kevin Eltief and Jay Hartzell have done a better job of also being in alignment with Chris Del Conte and having a better vision than previous regents and presidents and athletic directors have had. And that culminates in the really extraordinary accomplishment of moving to the SEC and pulling that off at the end of a legislature session so that everybody there couldn't interfere with it, because Greg Abbott would have had to call a special session for everybody to try to get up in arms about Texas leaving for the SEC, which didn't happen, which, you know, I mean, I don't know how effective any of that would have been, but just like in terms of avoiding the horrible political theater that could have been, they did that. And just like, I mean, the ability to put a lid on that information until somebody found out and told the Texas A&M beat writer in the middle of SEC media days, in terms of information control, that's an extraordinary accomplishment. They didn't even just pull off the move. They made sure that nobody knew about it until it was so far gone that Texas A&M couldn't do anything about it. Baylor, TCU, Texas Tech, all of the other political entities that can come to bear in this state, they couldn't do anything. It was already done. It was past what they could impact. And that's an extraordinary accomplishment of leadership.
Especially in 2023, where it feels like, or I guess that was 2021
that happened.
This has been the longest like decade of my life, but the last 4 years have been a really long decade. Especially the age of like everything breaks via Twitter. You have draft picks breaking before on Twitter before they break on TV. And so it's wild to see that. And I think, again, you talk about alignment, you talk about how these things stay buttoned up. Like, it's really keeping all of your ducks in a row, keeping people, again, within their lanes, within their spots. And
Somebody told Chris Blonsky that she couldn't tell Chip Brown, I guess.
I mean, you know, it's trying to figure out.
Or whatever, you know.
Like, hey.
However that went down in the Pac-12 stuff.
I'm fine with it. It's trying to figure out who the mouthpieces are is always fun, because I think there's a longer conversation to be had about Sark playing sources against each other, and that's a whole other conversation for another day. But I think, you know, on the other side of that, not just the kind of high level stuff, but even, you know, the way that they've approached staffing, I think, is something to talk about as well. Because I remember, you know, when Del Conte came in, and I distinctly remember Kyle and I having a conversation on the podcast. I was in my old office at my old house, and I was like, you know, they're letting Karen Aston's contract expire. You know, I mean, she's not a world beater, but like, who out there are you going to get that's better at this point? Nobody really is on the market. And then a couple of weeks later, it's like, oh, Vic Schaefer wasn't on the market, but I guess he was, right? And so like those types of hires where, you know, he's been able to come in, Eldrick Floreal, right? Mike White, the new sand volleyball coach, the new swimming and diving coach. These are national championship level or national championship winning coaches. The story of the volleyball coach or the swimming coach saying, hey, I have to go win a national championship real quick, and then came back to the interview is just ridiculous. And now he's wearing burnt orange. So I think there's something to be said about not just like that level of, you know, creating that game day environment in Austin. I remember it was like absolutely awful when I was in school. People would, you show up in the second quarter, you leave in the third quarter, and that's what game days were. And now it's an event, and it's become a legitimate home field advantage. But I think the pairing of getting good on-field product with getting alignment from top to bottom and having an athletic director that can hire good staff while also creating momentum, it's just kind of, it feels like almost the perfect storm to get Texas back to where fans, I think, want and almost deserve for it to be.
Yeah, no question about that. One thing that I think, you know, stands out about, you know, Chris Del Conte, especially compared to Steve Patterson, is just his ability to relate to people, you know, as a person. But I think, you know, he's also extremely prepared. Like, he talks about, you know, how, you know, for every coach, he has a list of people that, you know, are on his radar where if it comes to it, these are the people that he wants to hire. And so, you know, I didn't actually end up writing about this. Just kind of like a busy time of the year, but you're just like sitting in on the introductory press conference for the new swimming and diving coach. You know, it was really remarkable because, you know, Eddie Reese has kind of had decided that he wanted to remove himself, you know, from that process. And he showed up in you know, Chris Del Conte's office one day, and, you know, he kind of sat down, you know, as the process was very advanced. And he was like, it's Bowman, isn't it? And Del Conte was like, yeah. And so I think like the ability for it to work like that, where, you know, you don't want to rely too much, you know, on these institutions to make these decisions for you. But also at the same time, you can come to the same decision that the greatest swimming and diving coach of all time would have wanted to happen, I think is representative of this level of alignment that, you know, things can work out that well and that Texas can provide, you know, that much of an opportunity. And, you know, I think this also relates to, you know, Steve Sarkisian, you know, staying at Texas. You know, Del Conte and the administration working on a contract extension for him, a raise that was well-deserved after the run to the Big 12 title in the college football playoffs. And then all of a sudden his mentor, Nick Saban, retires. Sarkisian, you know, widely rumored or, you know, reported to be a potential, you know, replacement for Saban across a lot of times. And Sarkisian decided that he wanted to create his own legacy in Austin and that he wanted to do it at Texas. And then at the same time, you can have someone like Bowman who's willing to follow a legend like Eddie Reese. And so that's kind of the best of both sides, where you can replace a great coach, but also at the same time, you can hold on to an up-and-coming coach who passes up an opportunity to maybe be in a situation where he doesn't, you know, have as much capital there and he wants to build his own legacy at Texas. And so, you know, I think from both sides, you know, for Texas right now, you can build there in terms of, you know, coaches staying, you know, coming in and just really building up this athletic department.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think as we shift, let's look like future, you know, Texas is on the cusp of the numbers look wonky right now, but Texas on the cusp of probably winning its another Director's Cup as it heads into the SEC. You know, if you asked me the question a couple of years ago, I would have said that Texas, the athletic department overall, especially not the football team, wasn't really in its best position to be heading to the SEC in the 23-24, I guess, 24-25 season now. When it'll officially happen, but it feels like in the last 18 months, it's almost flipped. And so from your perspective, like, how do you think Texas is positioned for that jump? Are they ready? What are you excited about? What are your concerns? Like, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. So, you know, I think one thing that Texas has going for it, especially in football, besides, you know, the rise of the football program under Steve Sarkisian, you know, it's how they've structured the conference schedule, you know, where they try to pit teams that have similar records. Texas is going to have a very easy schedule as it relates to the entire SEC. Like, they're really set up for success, you know, in their first 2 years with the teams that are on their schedule. They don't have to play Alabama. They don't have to play LSU. I mean, and really, like, I mean, how, you know, when you talk about the landscape of SEC football, they don't have to play, I mean, Ole Miss, we can say they don't have to play Ole Miss. I mean, you know, Lane Kiffin putting together, you know, the best team that free agency can acquire. I mean, it's going to be fascinating, you know, to watch what, you know, what he does with that. You know, so I think, you know, three major opponents there that would be extremely difficult for Texas to play. You know, they miss out on, you know, they get Vanderbilt. I mean, it's just, it's set up extremely well for Texas. I think there's a mythology around the SEC that exists that I think is overblown, you know, in a lot of ways. And right now, I mean, we're talking about an SEC that doesn't have Nick Saban as a head coach. And, you know, he's been the looming figure over the SEC with that Alabama dynasty for so long, that, you know, I think Texas is very well positioned in football, not only in terms of their schedule, but the way that the roster is peaking, you know, having Arch Manning, you know, potentially start, you know, in their second year, all the talent that they're assembling, the ability to bring in impact players from the transfer portal, you know, basketball, I think moving to the SEC is going to provide a hit to the schedule. It's also going to be much easier to win games. Whether winning those games is ultimately meaningful in terms of setting the team up for success in the postseason, they're going to be able to win a lot of games in the basketball in the SEC under Rodney Terry. You know, I'm happy with how the roster construction looks. I think really, you know, if they could land JT Toppin, that would be huge. That guy's a real magnifier, I think, in terms of his ability from taking Texas from maybe a potential Sweet 16 team to being, you know, maybe like an Elite Eight competing for a Final Four type of team. You know, baseball probably, you know, the big three sports is what I'm concerned about the most right now. I don't have a ton of confidence in David Pierce, partly because of the contrast in particularly with how he interacts with people, especially compared with, you know, Rodney Terry and Steve Sarkisian, who I think, you know, are just really exemplary people, you know, in how they deal with, you know, with athletes, the rest of the administration, everybody. I don't think that David Pierce matches up with them. I think that it's extremely concerning for me that he hasn't been able to bring in effective pitching talent other than, you know, I mean, Gage Baim, like, has been a great addition. That's a junior college guy. Like, why is it that all of the transfer portal guys from other schools are ineffective right now for Texas pitching when David Pierce has taken that over? That's going to be a huge step up in competition. The Big 12 baseball is not very good right now. You know, I'm concerned about how Texas is going to compete there. And I think the thing that David Pierce should really be concerned about is that he's not a Chris Del Conte hire.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how that plays out, especially because, I mean, the SEC is going to – that's the one that I'm concerned with, and I've said it before. Like, I would – if you had to bet, like, which one does Texas win first, a football or a baseball conference championship, I would say football, mm-hmm. and not because yeah. of any knock on football, but the baseball is so good. And so I think there is, you know – David Pierce, I think you're probably right. Like, it's hard to knock a guy who's on the cusp of a, you know, they have a shot at a Big 12 championship. I don't think it'll happen, but they're in the mix, right? There is something to be said about, you know, when the pitching woes continue and you take over as the pitching coach, as the head coach, like, that's your kind of last get out of jail free pass for the pitching issues. And that's been the issue for last several years. And I think, you know, Pierce has gotten bailed out by some of the best offensive performances we've seen in Texas baseball history. And so I'm curious to see what that looks like when it's Vandy on the other side, or when it's any of the SEC schools, Arkansas or whoever, right? All of these SEC powers that continually just have flamethrowers on the mound, it's not going to get it done. And I think your two out of three series that Pierce is kind of hanging his hat on right now become one out of three real quickly.
Right. And so I think, you know, the best credit that I think Pierce deserves is for his ability to develop hitting. I mean, he also made the decision to bring the fences in, you know, a little bit at DKR. And I think that makes less of a difference than, you know, like Texas was very late. Speaking of like facility improvements under Chris Del Conte, they were like the last school, like one of the last schools in the Big 12 to have like an indoor baseball facility. Like why? Like what? Like that's one of those things where what is Texas doing? Texas doesn't have an indoor baseball facility after almost everybody else in the country. That's ridiculous. And so once they've done that, they're sitting on an incredible mine of talent in Texas. Pierce has also done a good job of recruiting in California. Steve Rodriguez, I think bringing him in from Baylor, former Pepperdine head coach, you know, has helped in that way. And, you know, I think Caleb Longley is responsible for a lot of that hitting. You see the growth of guys like Jalen Flores, Max Ballou won Big 12 Player of the Year this year because of his incredible progress. But to me, those are very baseline things. Texas baseball should be able to recruit in California. That shouldn't be a problem. If Chris Del Conte has to go out and hire somebody, he can hire somebody who can recruit in Texas and California. They have the facilities for hitting. They can keep Caleb Longley, like, if they want to. Maybe they can even keep True Tulowitzki for a while. And so I think you're exactly right. Like, the issue with David Pierce is that he's been scapegoating the rest of his assistant coaching staff for a while. And, you know, if he does it in a year when Texas was, you know, could have won a national championship if it hadn't been for Mississippi State's Will Bednar and Landon Sims, I mean, that's a smart decision by him. But you see, like, the continued turnover of all of these assistant coaches, continually firing pitching coaches, and then having extremely poor results as a pitching coach when he takes over. To me, that's inexcusable. I mean, you look at LeBaron Johnson, the Big 12 preseason pitcher of the year, ends up as a Sunday starter, struggling to get through four or five, you know, six innings on a Sunday. And the other thing that you mentioned, just the lack of stuff. Like, I see all these teams come in. I see TCU, Kansas come in. They're running guys out of the bullpen who have stuff up into the 90s. Who does Texas have other than LeBaron Johnson, who has a really quality fastball, like into the mid 90s? Like, Gage Baim has, like, he can throw a 93-mile-an-hour fastball. He doesn't even throw because he throws a slider 90% of the time, which is, like, that's worked great, but where are the guys with the stuff, and what is David Pierce doing that he can't bring them in and get them to pitch effectively? Because the guys that he's bringing in who don't have the quality stuff, they're not pitching effectively either.
So this could turn into a David Pierce bash real quick. So I want to put a button on this and I'll let you go. But I think what is, as you look to the future of Texas athletics, what is the thing that, like, you are most excited about? It's a big question.
Yeah, I think, you know, like, the easy thing to say would just be, you know, competing in the SEC in football and baseball, but you know, I think it's really phenomenal what's happening right now across sports and how many phenomenal coaches there are and how much success all of these athletes are having, because this is very much a continuation of the DeLoss Dodds legacy, where he made a very conscious decision that he didn't want to have a ton of varsity sports and he wanted to have a small number and he wanted to invest extremely heavy in them. And he wanted all of those sports to be able to compete not only for conference championships, but also for national championships. And right now, under the leadership of Chris Del Conte, the president, the regents, all of the support that's happening, the support from NIL, extremely important right now. It'd be remiss not to mention that. But everything is in alignment right now, and there are a ton of extraordinary coaches and a ton of extraordinary athletes who are doing really incredible things at Texas right now.
I love it. And that harkens back about, honestly, probably this time a year ago, we had Ryan Nanny on from the Fullcast, and we asked him, like, you know, what can, or what could Texas fans do to like change the narrative about like how Texas has been. And he compared it to like what's happening with Elon Musk, where it's like, you guys are the rich kids. And so everybody likes to laugh when the rich kids suck. So just stop sucking. And I feel like that's where we're at right now. It's like Texas finally doesn't suck. And it's not just the women's sports. It's not just swimming and diving. It's everything, right? It feels good.
Yeah. There's no excuses. The winning tradition of the University of Texas will not be entrusted to the weak or timid. Unfortunately, it seems like it has been at times. And right now, it certainly is not.
I love it. Well, Scott, that's a great way to close it out, man. If folks want more of what you've got to offer, where can they find you on the internet?
Yeah, of course, burnorangenation.com, contributions from you and all of our other incredible writers on Twitter. I'll dead name it forever.
Yeah, please.
SBN_Westcott, WESCOTT.
Honor pronouns, don't honor X. Thank you so much for joining us, Wes Van. We'll do this again soon, brother.
I hope so.
It seemed a little redundant to do this after such a great conversation with Westcott, but we've got a couple of things that we want to update you on, and we'll whip around the rest of campus real quick, and we'll down the 40. So speaking of the baseball team, sophomore Max Bellew was named the Big 12 Player of the Year after really coming alive during Big 12 play. 11 of his 17 home runs came during conference play. He had 341 with 14 doubles and 49 runs batted in on the season. He becomes the fifth Texas player to win that award, gets it on the way out. The second of the past three seasons, joining Ivan Melendez, you all remember him, back from 2022. He was one of nine Texas men to be named to the All Big 12 team. Jalen Flores, Jared Thomas, and Gage Bohm joined him on the first team. Peyton Powell made his second appearance on the second team All Big 12. Third team, Ryan Galvin, Will Gasparino, Max Grubbs, and Ace Boogie himself, Ace Whitehead, rounded out the third team. This was a notable selection also because he and his counterpart on the other side of the street, Reese Atwood, become the fifth pair in Big 12 history to claim both the softball and baseball players of the year, the first one for the University of Texas. On the ladies' side, the women currently are on the outside looking in at the NCAA Stroke Play Championship. How it works is basically you play three rounds of stroke play, and then the top eight teams go to the match play championship over a two-day period. Texas is currently, they're only at this point nine strokes back for the cut, but that is second to last in the field. So it would take a massive, massive, massive Tuesday from them. They would have to go way under par as a team, and that doesn't just look like it's going to be an opportunity for them to do that, but still making it to the final weekend is a big win for them. On the men's side, the Texas men won the regional championship over the weekend, so they're going to go to Carlsbad. They're on their way there right now for the stroke play tournament that will start on Friday, and that'll run through Monday. And again, same format as the ladies, the top eight teams in the stroke play, stroke play rounds will go to the match play championship over the weekend. And that's all we've got for you this week. We should be back next week. Full complement of host Kyle should be back next week again. He was scheduled to be back on this week, but if you're in Houston, again, our hearts and thoughts go out to all those folks in Houston affected by the storm. So he does not have power. He'll be back next week. And again, just thoughts and prayers to him and his family. Obviously, it's tough having a newborn. It's extra tough not having power when you have a newborn. So again, thoughts and prayers out to him. We'll talk to him next week. Get all the updates from him, all the exciting awesome news there. But that's all we've got for you this week. You can find me on Twitter at GH Goodrich, for the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. He's Kyle Carpenter on Twitter at Kyle R. Carpenter. You can follow the show on the other social medias at Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We're a few weeks out from our summer preview series. So we'll have a lot of fun stuff. We'll go again. If you're new to us, we'll go week by week through the Texas schedule in reverse, starting with the season closer and starting and ending the week before the season. We'll talk about Colorado State to close out the summer. We'll also do on alternating days position previews, giving you our looks into the other the depth chart and how we feel like it's going to shake out for the year. But thank you all so much for being with us again this week. We'll be back to full strength next week. And until next time.